They came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gerasenes. And when Jesus had stepped out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit. He lived among the tombs, and no one could bind him any more, not even with a chain, for he had often been bound with shackles and chains, but he wrenched the chains apart, and he broke the shackles in pieces. No one had the strength to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always crying out and cutting himself with stones. And when he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and fell down before him, and crying out with a loud voice, he said, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God, do not torment me." For he was always saying to him, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." And Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" And he replied, "My name is Legion, for we are many." And he begged him earnestly not to send them out of the country. Now a great herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside, and they begged him, saying, "Send us to the pigs, let us enter them." So he gave them permission, and the unclean spirits came out and entered the pigs, and the herd, numbering about 2,000, rushed down the steep bank into the sea and were drowned in the sea. The herdsmen fled and told it to in the city and the country, and people came to see what it was that had happened. And they came to Jesus and saw the demon-possessed man, the one who had had the legion, sitting there, clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. And those who had seen it described it to them what had happened to the demon-possessed man and to the pigs, and they began to beg Jesus to depart from their region. As he was getting into the boat, the man who had been possessed with demons begged him that he might be with him. And he did not permit him, but said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you, and how he has had mercy on you." And he went away and began to proclaim in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him. And everyone marveled. So from this passage, we're asking the question, what is Christian faith? It's an important question because there are many, many voices calling us to have faith in something. I hear it on the radio an awful lot. Our rock stars sing, "When the road gets dark and you can no longer see, let my love throw a spark and have a little faith in me." 5 points, who knows who that was sung by? John Hyatt. Anyway, old timer. Recently, Dwayne The Rock Johnson released a little video on Facebook, and he talks about a bad experience in his life that later turned out for his good. And he says to us, you know, when times are really tough in your life, you just got to have a little faith. And when I hear people call us to faith, generally, we give them the benefit of the doubt. It's a positive sentiment, and they mean us well, even though they don't tell us what it is we ought to have faith in. And so they just seem like positive sentiments. But when Christians talk about faith, specifically when Christians talk about have faith in Jesus, what do we mean? What do Christians mean by their by having faith? Mark 5, this passage we just read, helps us answer this question. In this incident, we find responses that provoked both non-faith and faith responses to Jesus. And so that helps us, and that helps reveal to us what Christian faith is, or what Christians mean when they talk about faith in Jesus. So let's take a closer look. The first person we come across in this passage is a man removed from society, either forcibly or self-imposed exile. It simply tells us that this man, this central figure, lived among the tombs. That's where he was exiled to. I don't know about you, but I remember very well when I was a teenager and I walked home from late night parties, and I would walk past the Whanganui Cemetery quite often. It wasn't a very pleasant place at 12 in the morning. It was just not pleasant to be around. Now, superstitions aside, when you come across cemeteries late at night, it's not the kind of place that you'd imagine calling home for yourself, right? Let's make a life living around the tombs, right? So this man that we come across in the story, I just want you to, just for starters, just imagine what kind of life he was subjected to because of his problem, because of his possession by demons, right? This oppression that came upon him from an evil spirit. It wasn't a pretty life. It was a difficult life. And this man, the Bible simply tells us, had an unclean spirit. In other words, he was oppressed or mastered by a demonic spiritual being. Now, I'm going to stop right there because I recognize that in our cultural climate, it's a difficult thing to talk about demonic spirits and so on. For one, we live in a majority atheistic and secular Western world, right? And as an atheist, they might just simply read this passage and go, that's superstitious naivety to talk about demons oppressing people. That's superstitious. There's nothing beyond the material world. There is no spiritual world. There are no demons. There are no angels. There is no God. That's an atheistic worldview, that there is just the material world. So they would not account for demons and angels, for God, for a devil. None of that. And maybe it is that you or someone you know think along those lines about the world, that there is only the material world, that there is no spiritual reality. If that is you or someone that you know, I would just ask you something this morning. I want to ask you this. Have you considered that most of the world are not secular atheists and do not share your worldview? Have you considered that the majority of the world are actually filled with religious people, and that the majority of the religions that they subscribe to do account for the spiritual world and spiritual realities like demons? And so even if you find yourself firmly committed to a material-only world, consider that the majority of the world does not share your view. I would just like you to think then that perhaps those assumptions that you have and hold to very dearly about the nature of reality, maybe you just want to hold them a little bit more humbly. That there are other people who do not share your view. And so we want to be humble about those assumptions we have about the non-existence of the spiritual world. That said, what of it? So what? What does the presence of an evil spiritual power wrecking a man's life have to tell us about Christian faith? Right? We're asking the question about what is Christian faith. So the story goes on. Up to this point, I'll just remind you, in Mark's account of Jesus' life, Jesus has encountered spiritual and natural forces already and exerted his power over them. Mano a mano, one on one. He has gone one on one with a spiritual, with a demon, which he exercised in Mark chapter 1, and then over a storm in Mark chapter 4. So it's always been one on one. Now, Mark chapter 5 tells us that Jesus is vastly outnumbered. It is no longer just in a ring one on one. There are legion. There are many. That's what we find in the text when Jesus asks him, "What's your name?" And he says, "My name is Legion, for we are many." That's what legion means. So Mark is just setting us up to ask also the question, will Jesus finally be outnumbered? Will this finally be too much for him? Sure, he may have been able to achieve something great one-on-one, but now the odds are stacked against him. Will he have finally met his match? That's the tension behind this scene. So that said, we come across now the first response to Jesus in this story. And it reveals to us what Christians do not mean when we talk about faith. This is what we not mean when we talk about faith. The first response is from a demon. And he correctly identifies Jesus. He names him, crying out with a loud voice, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God?" He gets it. He knows who Jesus is. What does that tell us about Christian faith? Well, it tells us that this demon knew something good and true about Jesus. Further, he is even able to articulate his knowledge, his good and true knowledge about Jesus to others. But, and this is the point, knowing good and true things about Jesus is not the sum total of Christian faith. It's good to have good and true knowledge about Jesus, but by itself, it is not Christian faith fully formed. Many years ago, I remember a theologian and pastor, R.C. Sproul, using an analogy to talk about this idea of knowing something true and good, but not coming to the level of faith. And he says someone who potentially knows something good and true about Jesus is kind of like someone who sees a chair, right, a pew or whatever it is. He recognizes something good and true about the pew or the chair, that pew or chair will hold his weight, but then refuses to take a seat on that pew or chair. In other words, you can know something good or true about the chair, but not invest any personal commitment to it. Loosely speaking, that is the response of the demon to Jesus. He knows something good and true about Jesus, but he will not commit to Jesus. And so that illustrates for us what Christian faith is not. Christian faith is not knowing something good and true about Jesus, as good as that is, and lacking a personal commitment to him. That is not Christian faith, when you lack a personal trust commitment to him. The story goes on. There's a second response to Jesus. The townspeople, the people from the villages and townships and so on, who had heard what had happened and now had come to see what was going on. The townspeople recognized the power of Jesus liberating a man who was possessed by demons. They knew the man. They knew how crazy he was. And now they saw and recognized what Jesus had done. They knew his power and how he restored this person. This is how it went down. Let me refresh your memories. Now, a great herd of pigs were feeding there on the hillside, and they begged him, saying, "Send us to the pigs and let us enter." So he gave them permission, and the unclean spirits came out. And you know the rest of the story, how the pigs were drowned in the sea. If you feel sorry for the pigs, and you want to know why is that an important detail in the Bible, like why leave that in there, right? I mean, it's 2,000 pigs, it's a lot of bacon. If you feel sorry for them and you really want to know why it's there in the story, please come and see me afterwards. We can talk that out and share some ideas there. But for our purposes, what Jesus accomplished in this event is really clear. And not only was the multitude of demons no match for Jesus, Jesus' power over a multitude of demons is so comprehensive that he simply permits, get that word, permits them to go and torment pigs instead of a man made in the image of God. I want you to just note two quick things here. Notice when Jesus performs this exorcism, Jesus offers no ritual. He performs no incantation. He holds up no crucifix in order to exert his power over the demonic world. That's important. Our movies routinely tell us that if you do a great incantation, if you say the right spell, if you perform the right ritual in just the right way, then maybe, you'll get some kind of exorcism taking place. None of that is true of Jesus. There is no ritual, there is no spell. It is just Jesus and his authoritative word. That's it. The second thing I want you to notice as Jesus performs an exorcism here is this. Jesus does not call on a higher power. That's an important detail. He doesn't look up to heaven and say, "Father, by your power, let this happen now." Why not? He is the higher power. He doesn't need any help because he is the source from whom all help comes. He doesn't need to look anywhere outside of himself to achieve what he has achieved there. He is the higher power, and therefore his word matters and carries authority. Now, you may have questions about whether exorcisms still play a part in the Christian life in the 21st century. We can talk about that. But make no mistake, in this event, here in history, in Mark chapter 5, those who knew the tormented man could see that after Jesus' intervention, this man was changed. They saw something real, tangible, something recognizable happened to this man. Verse 15 tells us that they came to Jesus and saw that the demon-possessed man, the one who had the legion sitting there, clothed and in his right mind. And they were afraid. They knew that something happened. Okay? Whether you believe in exorcisms or not, that man's life was changed. Now, these town folk who saw what had happened, they too respond to Jesus in a particular way. When they see the new reality that Jesus brought about in this man's life, they respond. And their response also tells us what Christian faith is not. Here's their response. They began to beg Jesus to depart from their region. I mean, I don't know about you or what you make of that. If you've just seen Jesus liberate a man possessed by a demon, and your response is to beg Jesus to go away. Let me take a shot at trying to figure out what's going on here. The townspeople, of course, knew something good and true about Jesus, just like the demon did. They saw the evidence. They saw the miracle. The evidence of the miracle that had taken place. And yet the evidence provided is not sufficient. It's not strong enough to spark faith into life, right? What I mean is this, it is quite possible to see a genuine miracle, right? An irrefutable miracle, and still be resistant to Jesus. That is possible. Why? How is it that we can witness great things by the hand of Jesus and still tell him to go away? I think it has something to do with the fact that when Jesus shows his power in the life of other people, it also means that he is capable of doing that same thing, of exerting his power in your life. And for Jesus to come and do something powerful in your life means you have to let go of some autonomy. You have to let go of self-governance and doing your own thing. Jesus is a threat to our self-wills. You see, the town people saw the result of the miracle. There was no denying the brute facts, right? I mean, this man was crazy and now he's in a sound mind, fully clothed, behaving. There's just no denying the brute evidence in front of them. And yet it would seem that they felt so personally threatened by Jesus. Because that means that if he has that kind of power, that means that he has come to transform their lives as well. And that just as this demon, once demon-possessed man pledged his loyalty to Jesus, maybe Jesus is now going to ask that kind of loyalty from the townspeople as well. And they say, forget that. I beg you to go away. Don't bring that kind of power into our town. Don't bring that kind of demand for loyalty into our living rooms. They don't want Jesus to shape their future. And so this too illustrates for us what Christian faith is not. Christian faith is not simply coming into contact with sufficient evidence for Jesus, but ultimately pursuing our own interests and not his. There is, of course, a third response in this story, a model of Christian faith. It comes from the liberated man. Let me just refresh our minds there. Jesus was getting into a boat, and the man who had been possessed with demons begged him that he might be with him. And Jesus did not permit him, but said to him, "Go to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." And he went away and began to proclaim in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and everyone marveled. His response is interesting for a number of reasons here. On the surface, this man showed real and genuine faith in Jesus, right? I mean, it's a model response. He knew and experienced the liberating power of Jesus. And when Jesus told him to go and spread the word of what the Lord has done for him, he goes and spread the word about what Jesus has done for him. He's connected Lord with Jesus, that Jesus is truly Lord or master over his life. So he goes and spreads that news. That is an indication or evidence of true Christian faith, that you have recognized Jesus' mastery over your life. And further, he has this profound interest and eagerness to go and tell others about Jesus. That too is an indicator of real and true, genuine Christian faith in your life. And all this paints a picture of what Christian faith really is. When Christians talk about have faith in Jesus, we mean this. We mean go and do as Jesus has told you, surrendered to him. To know something good and true about Jesus, to invest a personal commitment in Jesus, and then to live a life surrendered to Jesus. This is what this man does, and this is what Christian faith is. This is what we mean when we talk about being Christians or people who have faith in Jesus. But his response goes deeper, doesn't it? His response goes deeper. He shows us a quality of faith, a genuine sincerity of his faith. Don't miss this. He's a new Christian. The first thing he asks of Jesus is, Jesus, can I hang out with you? Can I be one of your disciples? The first answer to the first prayer that he gets is no. How does this man respond? I'll stuff you, I'll just go do my own thing. What is his response? He goes on to do whatever it is that Jesus requires of him. Even if it's a thing he didn't want to do in the first, like his first preference, right? Jesus, I want to be your disciple. No, go back to your friends. Tell them about me. And he does it gladly. There's a sincerity and a quality of faith that this man shows us. He was willing to follow Jesus, not simply as long as Jesus gave him what he wanted, but he was willing to follow Jesus even if it means to set aside his own interests and his own preferences. He was willing to follow Jesus even when Jesus didn't give him all that he wished for. And that reveals to us the deep, sincere quality of Christian faith. Obeying Jesus, even when the thing he gives us to do is not the thing we initially hoped for. So, in this short episode, the author has given us three responses to Jesus. Two of the responses show us what Christian faith is not, and the third is a model of genuine Christian faith. Our summary is this. When Christians speak of faith, we do not mean simply knowing something good and true about Jesus. We saw that even demons are capable of that response. When Christians speak of faith, we do not mean come into contact with people who have had profound experiences of Jesus' power, but personally remain unwilling to follow him. We see that even townspeople were capable of that response to Jesus. When Christians speak of faith, we mean that we are to know something good and true about Jesus and invest a personal commitment to him. And then, through a lifelong path of obedience, we learn to trust him as our master.